Greetings to each of you in the precious name of Jesus. It's good to be here again this morning. My sermon title this morning is just three words. Coincidence or providence? This sermon idea came to me yesterday, and those two words were spoken by Dr. Carson at the Helping Hands benefit auction in northern Missouri. And I thought about that on the way home, and I've been inspired by the thoughts that come to my mind surrounding coincidence or providence. We're here in this assembly this morning. I'm quite certain that this building on a Sunday morning has never had all the same people in it that are here this morning, without exception. And it's usually that way in our services, that the day is new because the people present are not the same as last Sunday. There might be different times to that, but if you are here this morning, are you here by coincidence or providence? Maybe we need to define those two words. Coincidence and providence are big words, for the benefit of those who might not have a clear understanding of them. Let's think about what they mean. Coincidence. Coincidence is, the root word of coincidence is coincide. And coincide means to fall or to meet at the same point. It means a meeting of events in time. Or it simply means two things happening at the same time. Coincidence. Its synonym that we use more frequently in our world today is the word chance. Chance. I just chanced to be there when you were. We both showed up at the same time. And it was coincidence, was not planned ahead. Providence, on the other hand, is timely care, particularly active foresight. The care and in relation to God, providence has other meanings too, but in relation to God, it is the care and superintendence which God exercises over his created creatures. God is prudently careful with what he has created. God is also prudent in preparing for future urgent occasions. That is providence. The purpose of this message this morning is to get you thinking about what is coincidence and what is providence. And while it is true that there are gray lines between them, and we may not always come to the right conclusion about which is coincidence and which is providence, it has been beneficial for me to think about coincidence and providence. Where do I place the things that happen in this life? Do I place them in the realm of coincidence? Or do I place them in the realm of providence? And it is important, as I thought about it, in my own life that we are men and women of faith and that we believe in the providence of God and that we do not overlook God's providence and just call it coincidence. I cannot divide all of that for you, but you think about that as we go through the message this morning. Coincidence or providence? Turn to Esther chapter 3. In thinking about this subject, I felt like this was the clearest Bible story that could illustrate the providence of God that I knew of. Maybe you think of others. There are many. But Esther chapter 3, you know the story of Esther well. We're breaking into the middle of it in chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 1. Prior to this, we have Esther being made queen. And in chapter 3, it says, after these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above all the princes that were with him. And all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai, who if we read the chapters before, we realized was a Jew and a relation of Esther's, but Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Then the king's servants which were in the king's gate said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath, and he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone. For they had showed him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout all the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. Skipping a few verses, we have in the next couple verses Haman bringing his proposition to Ahasuerus about this lawless people in his land. He doesn't mention that they're Jews. But he said, if it please the king, in verse 9, let it be written that they may be destroyed. And the king did that. The king took his ring in his hand and handed it out to Haman. He said, go and do it. The king's scribes were called in verse 12. The letters were sent by post into all the provinces in verse 13. The post went out in verse 15. And the decree was given in Shushan the palace, and the king and Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. The city's people did not understand why their king would send such an edict to destroy all the Jews. Chapter 4, when Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes, and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and a bitter cry, and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and her chamberlains came and told it her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he received it not. Then called Esther for Hatach, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So Hatach went forth to Mordecai unto the street of the city which was before the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay for the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. Also he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him and to make request before him for his people. And Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again Esther spake unto Hatak and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. Here's what she said: all the king's servants and the people of the provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to him the king should hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. We're not used to kings like this. But this king, in showing his authority, this was standard policy. No one was allowed to come and see him unless he called them. You didn't just show up and knock on the king's door. If you did, you were risking your life, because when the door opened and he saw who you were, he could tell the men to cut off your head, or he would give you the golden scepter. Esther explained that again to Mordecai. I believe Mordecai understood it. Verse 12, and they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. What's he saying? Don't think that you'll be saved just because you're the queen. You're still a Jew. And he said, if you don't do it, God's going to have it be done another way. God's going to protect his people. Mordecai believed in the providence of God. In the face of death, he believed that God could intervene and would intervene. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? It's a strange story, the first couple chapters of Esther and her being brought to be the queen of this wicked king. And Mordecai may have wondered about that when that all took place. But here he says, perhaps that's why you're the queen, to save our people. Mordecai believed in the providence of God in difficult situations. Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer: go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house. And the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house, over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther, the queen, standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said the king unto her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther, and what is thy request? It shall be even given thee to the half of the kingdom. And Esther answered, if it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him. The chapter continues, and you know how Esther had the same request a number of days in a row. We're shown how Haman, through it all, was very proud. He was proud that he was the only one invited to go with the king and the queen to a banquet. Verse 13, Haman says, he's talking to his family, "Yet all this availeth me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends, said unto him, "Let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet." And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. On that night, could not the king sleep. Why was it that night that the king couldn't sleep? There were many other nights. What was the providence of God that interrupted his sleep and not allowed him to sleep? That wasn't coincidence. We understand that perfectly. And he commanded to bring the book of the records of the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's chamberlains, the keepers of the door, who sought to lay hand on the king of Ahasuerus. And the king said, "What honor and dignity hath been done to Mordecai for this?" Then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, "There is nothing done for him." And the king said, "Who is in the court?" Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. Now why did Haman come at that moment? Again, we see the finger of God. And the king's servants said unto him, "Behold, Haman standeth in the court." And the king said, "Let him come in." So Haman came in, and the king said unto him, "What shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor?" Now Haman thought in his heart, "To whom would the king delight to do honor more than to myself?" And so he answered accordingly. And Haman answered the king, "For the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let the royal apparel be brought with the king, which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head." I don't think that had ever happened in Ahasuerus' kingdom before, that his robe and his horse was ridden by another man. I think Haman struck high because he pictured himself on that horse with the king's apparel and the king's horse and the crowd applauding. "And let this apparel and the horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man withal whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, 'Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor.'" Then the king said to Haman, "Make haste, and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate. Let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken." Then took Haman the apparel and the horse, and arrayed Mordecai, and brought him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaimed before him, "Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor." And Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. And Haman told Zeresh, his wife, and his friends everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men and Zeresh, his wife, unto him, "If Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, before whom thou hast begun to fall, Thou shalt not prevail against him, but shalt surely fall before him. And while they were yet talking with him, came the king's chamberlains and hasted to bring Haman onto the banquet that Esther had prepared. And at this banquet in chapter 7, Esther gives her real reason for having these banquets. And she petitions that her people would be saved and that they would not perish. King Ahasuerus in verse 5 has a hard time putting together what has happened. Perhaps he has had too much wine in the past while he's giving the edict, because he doesn't seem to even know who it is. Who is he and where is he that doth presume in his heart to do so? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. Verse 9, and Harbona, one of the chamberlains, said before the king, behold also the gallows 50 cubits high, which Haman had made for Mordecai, who had spoken good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Then the king said, hang him thereon. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. In chapter 8, we have the working out. We have the fact that Ahasuerus cannot reverse what he had wrote earlier, but he had to write something else. And he did that in favor of the Jews, gave them opportunity to fight out against their enemies as well. Mordecai was honored in the end of chapter 8. He went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, and with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan was no longer perplexed. They rejoiced and were glad. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day, and many of the people of the land became Jews, for fear of the Jews fell upon them. The book of Esther closes with three verses in chapter 10. And the king Ahasuerus laid a tribute upon the land and upon the isles of the sea, and all the acts of his power and of his might, and the declaration of the greatness of Mordecai, whereunto the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was next unto the king Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the wealth of his people, and speaking peace to all his seed. Quite a reversal of what could have taken place in this story. But because of the providence of God and because of his timing, his precise timing, this is where the story ended. A beautiful passage that we contribute all to the providence of God. I don't think any of us would say, well, these things were coincidence. It was the providence of God. However, truth be told, you looking back at your life, it isn't that clear. It's very easy for us to see this picture and call it the providence of God. But when we look back at our lives and the things that we've faced in life, we can see steps where God providently provided for us. But then we see other times that appear to be coincidences. And some of them we call negative. We tend to call all the negative ones coincidence and all the positive ones providence. But that's not always true. Turn with me to Proverbs chapter 11. The wise man has some words here worth reading. Proverbs 11 and verse 2. Note the opposites here as we read. Proverbs 11, verse 2, when pride cometh, then cometh shame. So you see that? If you're proud, think about Haman. He was proud, and then came shame. And that's true, the proverb writer says. When pride cometh, that brings shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. So the humble and the lowly, instead of the proud, the pride gets proudful person gets shame, the lowly gets wisdom. The integrity of the upright shall guide them. The integrity of Mordecai and Esther in the story we read did give them guidance. And if we live as people of integrity, it will provide guidance for us in life. But the opposite, perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. Perverseness brings destruction. We see that in Haman. Riches profit not in the day of wrath. Haman thought riches profited a lot, but they didn't. Righteousness delivereth from death. We see that in Esther's life. Righteousness delivers from death. The righteousness of the perfect shall direct his way. So if you are a perfect, righteous man, then you will have the direction of God, just like Haman did, just like Mordecai and Esther did. They found their way through this precarious time in life because of their righteousness. But the wicked shall fall by his own wickedness. Haman fell by his own gallows that he had built. Sometimes we as Christians think that we're righteous and we need to bring justice on the wicked, but we don't. God in heaven, in his providence, can take care of wicked men, and he will. Verse 6, the righteousness of the upright shall deliver them. So righteousness brings deliverance. But transgressors shall be taken in their own naughtiness. Read those verses again sometime when you get a chance. There's a lot of wisdom there, a lot of promises there. Another spot in the Old Testament is the story of Joseph. And you know this story well. I think I can recite the high points of it to you. And think about the life of Joseph in relation to providence or coincidence. Think about the fact that Joseph, as a young teenager, was taken by his brothers and thrown into a pit. Think about the fact that one of his brothers was going to rescue him, would have returned him to his father if he had come first. But think about who came first. It was the Ishmaelites who came first, with their caravan carrying things to Egypt. Now, how likely was it that Joseph's brothers out there feeding their sheep would see a caravan of Ishmaelites headed for Egypt? I don't think that happened very often when they were out doing sheep, but that day it did. Was that providence or was that coincidence? Joseph was carried away to Egypt. He was sold to Potiphar. He lived in Potiphar's house. He was an honorable man, but he was tempted by Potiphar's wife. And the story ends that she told awful lies about what he had done, and people believed it. And he was cast into the king's prison. the place where the king's prisoners were kept. That wasn't the only prison of the day, but he was cast there. Was that coincidence or providence? In that king's prison, he met the butler and the baker, and they both dreamed strange dreams. And Joseph told them what the dreams meant. 2 years later, we have Pharaoh dreaming his dream. You children remember the story well of the cows in his dream. There were 7 skinny cows and 7 fat cows. Which ones ate up the other one? You remember the story? In Pharaoh's dream, there were 14 cows, but when his dream was done, there was only 7. What had happened to the other 7? Can any of you children tell me? The skinny cows ate the fat ones. Now, it was a dream. It was a dream, but in his dream, that's what happened. Was that coincidence or providence? After King Pharaoh told his dream, the butler remembered Joseph and remembered that he had failed Joseph to talk about him being thrown into prison unjustly and speak to the king to get him out. He had left him there for 2 years, forgot all about him, but when the king had this dream, the butler remembered. And then we know the story, how Joseph rose to power because of his prediction of the drought in the land. And we know that Joseph's brothers found their way down to Egypt because they were desperate. They were afraid their children were going to starve. And so they went down to Egypt to buy corn, and they got there. And here was Joseph. But he had grown up. They didn't know who he was. He knew them, but they didn't know him. Turn to Genesis 45. I'd like to just read a couple of Joseph's closing words in relation to that. Genesis 45. This is when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. In verse 5, he says, "Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves, that ye sold me hither." Can you think about that? A family of boys. There's a number of you living here present this morning that have a number of boys in your family, and think about your older brothers selling you to the land of Egypt. And think about what took place here, all the injustices in Joseph's life. And Joseph says, don't be angry with yourselves. Joseph had to see the providence of God, or he couldn't have said that. "Nor angry with yourselves that you sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in the which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance." And now his strongest statement, "So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God." It was not you, but it was God. A man of faith, a man of forgiveness, a man who could see God working in his life, even in the difficulties of life and the things that went wrong that were very unjust. Joseph said it was God. coincidence or providence. The struggles that have come into your life, the difficulties that you face, the injustices that you have endured in your life, are they coincidence or are they providence? Turn to Psalm 104. Psalm 104. A little different side to the providence of God. You remember in the definition that I gave you in the beginning, it was like this: the care and superintendence which God exercises over his created creatures. Psalm 104. Bless the Lord, O my soul. O Lord my God, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honor and majesty. Who coverest thyself with light as with a garment, who stretchest out the heavens like a curtain, who layeth the beams of his chambers in the waters, who maketh the clouds his chariot, who walketh upon the wings of the wind, who maketh his angels spirits, his ministers of flaming fire, who laid the foundations of the earth that it should not be removed forever. Thou coverest it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. At thy rebuke they fled. At the voice of thy thunder they hasted away. They go up by the mountains. They go down by the valleys unto the place which thou hast founded for them. Thou hast set a bound that they may not pass over. He's talking about the waters of the earth. God has set a bound on them that they turn not again to cover the earth. God protects his creatures from the water by placing a boundary at the edge of the water. He sendeth the springs into the valleys which run among the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field, and the wild asses quench their thirst. So is it providence or is it coincidence that all the wild animals in Morgan County this morning had something to drink? You didn't have anything to do with it. But is it coincidence or is it providence that watered them? By them shall the fowls of the heaven have their habitation, which sing among the branches. God made a place for the birds to sit down in the tree branches, and he gave them voices to sing with, and he takes care of them. That's the providence of God, too. He watereth the hills from his chambers. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of thy works. He causeth the grass to grow for the cattle, an herb for the service of man, that he may bring forth food out of the earth. Food that is brought out of the earth. We've gotten far from agriculture. And I fear at times that we're going to forget, even us, where our food comes from. It comes out of the ground. What makes it grow? What makes it produce? How can it possibly produce enough to feed humanity when you count the people of the earth? And yet it does, year after year, again and again, it feeds the world. The earth does, because God is in control and God's providence makes it grow. And wine that maketh glad the heart of man, and oil to make his face to shine, and bread which strengtheneth man's heart. The trees of the Lord are full of sap. The cedars of Lebanon which he hath planted. If you study about trees, you know how important sap is to the life of a tree. And why are the trees full of sap? Because of the finger of God. Where the birds make their nest. As for the stork, the fir trees are her house. The high hills are a refuge for the wild goats, and rocks for the conies. Homes are established in the hills and in the rocks. Places that we would say, why did he create that mountain of rocks? But it was for the conies. He appointed the moon for seasons. The sun knoweth his going down, Thou makest darkness, and it is night. The providence of God made darkness. Think about what it would be like to live in a world without darkness. Notice he says in the end of verse 20 that in the darkness is a time when all the beasts of the forest do creep forth. You ought to do that with your children sometime. I ought to do that with my children again. Take them out at night and help them to observe the creatures that come forth at nighttime. The young lions roar after their prey and seek their meat from God. They do that at night. Verse 22, the sun arises. They gather themselves together and they lay them down in their dens. When the sun comes out, the lion goes to sleep. And then what happens? Well, we don't live in a land of lions. But in the land of lions, the lion goes to his den and lays down and goes to sleep, and man goeth forth unto his work and to his labor until the evening. A safe place for the lions at night and a safe place for man in the daytime, established from the beginning. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. So is there great and wide sea, wherein are all things creeping innumerable, both small and great beasts. There go the ships. There is that Leviathan whom thou hast made to play therein. These wait all upon thee, that thou mayest give them their meat in due season. That thou givest them, they gather. Thou openest thine hand, they are filled with good. Thou hidest thy face, they are troubled. Thou takest away their breath, they die and return to their dust. Thou sendest forth thy spirit, they are created, and thou renewest the face of the earth. The glory of the Lord shall endure forever. The Lord shall rejoice in his works. He looketh on the earth, and it trembleth. He toucheth the hills, and they smoke. I will sing unto the Lord as long as I live. I will sing praise to my God, which I have while I have my being. My meditation of him shall be sweet. I will be glad in the Lord. Let the sinners be consumed out of the earth, and let the wicked be no more. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Praise ye the Lord. So is it coincidence or providence that all of God's creatures are sustained daily, hourly, without any of our help? Is it coincidence or providence that you and I are fed daily from the earth that God blesses? Just a few thoughts on more practical life, perhaps, discerning between coincidence and providence. Was it coincidence or providence that I personally was in Memphis, Missouri at the Helping Hands benefit auction yesterday? I had never been there before, but I was there. And I heard Dr. Carson speak these couple words that he spoke, and I was inspired by that. Was that coincidence or was that providence? In real life, when you have a flat tire on your car and you're trying to get to work and you're exasperated, is that coincidence or is it providence? When you have financial difficulty, and it seems like you've had a lot of things happen negatively to you in a year's time, is that providence or is that coincidence? For those of you who are married, the day you met your lady friend, or the day you met your husband-to-be the first time, was that providence or coincidence? When your child is sick and needs to be rushed to the hospital for some reason, is that providence or is that coincidence? We don't always know, but I believe in my own life I have ascribed too many things to coincidence and not enough to providence. May God help us to decipher between the two and honor Him even in difficult times of our lives. Shall we kneel for prayer?